Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The 4th of July has come and gone, and soon the dog days of summer will be upon us. And that means it's time for a summer reading edition of Studio Tulsa. Whether you're taking a book to the lake or to the beach, the mountains, or just as far as your backyard, our book reviewer Nancy Pearl has a recommendation for you. Nancy is known as America's Librarian and is the author of the Book Lust series of recommended reading. In her most recent book, The Writer's Library, reveals and interviews writers' favorite books in their own libraries that have inspired or hold deep meaning to them. And she joins us today with a list of mysteries, thrillers, and novels for Summer's Day reading. She's my guest today on Studio Tulsa. Nancy Pearl, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me on, Rich. I got such good books to talk about. I'm really excited.
And this looks like a great collection of books for summer reading. And I guess we should just jump right into it. And the first one on your list combines a story of environmentalism with a family memoir.
Yes, it's Kendra Attlee Work's Miracle Country, Memoir of a Family and a Landscape. And, you know, I'm not a huge memoir fan normally, but I really loved this book because of the combination that you referenced. This is a book of environmental history and a family memoir. And it's set in the High Sierras in California, which at one time was flourishing with plants and now is basically a desert in the middle of a long, years-long drought. And where did the water go? The water went to Los Angeles as a result of geologist William Mulholland and the owner of the Los Angeles Times, Otis. And together they, Otis bought up many, many, many thousands of acres of land, and Mulholland made it possible to get that water from the High Sierras into Los Angeles. So basically, this is the story of a family growing up, a kind of off-the-grid family growing up in a small town, Bishop, California. And I'm just kind of fascinated by the High Sierras, that area, high desert area of California. And this is just a very readable memoir and one that still makes you think about water and the conservation of our natural resources. So there's a memoir, an older memoir by Terry Tempest Williams called Refuge, An Unusual History of Family and Place, which is set around the Great Salt Lake. And it's another family and environmental book. And I loved that book. I loved Refuge. And I thought that Miracle Country is a perfect book for those people who loved Refuge.
The next book on your list is Eula Biss, Having and Being Had. It's a book that touches on economics, but she's not an economist, right?
No. Eula Biss is an adjunct teacher at Chicago University. She and her husband both. She's a writer. You know, when you think about reading a nonfiction book, when I think about reading a nonfiction book, I don't think that I'm going to do a lot of underlining in it. But I have to say, I underlined so much in my copy of Having and Being Had, because on every single page, there was an interesting idea or something that I wanted to follow through on. So this is a book that really grew out of the fact that Eula Biss and her husband bought their first washing machine. And it got her thinking about economics, about capitalism, about privilege, all of those things that are so sort of in the atmosphere these days. And she's a really, really interesting writer. And I just wanted to read just a paragraph from the section in the book where she's talking to an economist. And the economist says, oil and coal are capital. And we need to leave that capital in the ground. We should not mine it, sell it, buy it, or burn it. But people already own it. A journalist recently observed that the last time we walked away from an accumulation of capital this significant was emancipation. Isn't that an interesting way of thinking about just the world and the way it works? I just was so struck by this book. I think book groups that are interested in kind of a meaty discussion would do really well reading Ulibis's Having and Being Had.
Well, it sounds like it touches on issues of accumulation and consumption, but it also probably touches on income inequality as well. The
absolutely.
Being had part of the title.
Right. Exactly. And then you think about adjunct teaching. You know, if you've ever been an adjunct at a university or a college and you know how little you get paid per course, you can understand that being had part.
Yeah, it's Ulibis is Having and Being Had. Well, now from there, we turn to the world of poetry and Jericho Brown, The Tradition.
Yes.
What is special about Jericho's poetry?
Jericho Brown is a young African-American poet. This is his book, The Tradition, won the Pulitzer Prize last year, best book of poetry. And his poems are, they just take your heart and squeeze it. I mean, that's the best way that I can think of to describe his poetry. It is powerful. It's tender. It's a book that reflects on his experiences as an African-American man. And I was so glad it won the Pulitzer because it's a book of poetry that really needs to be widely read. And my favorite poem in it is called Hero. Can I read it to you?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, good. So Hero. She never knew one of us from another, so my brothers and I grew up fighting over our mother's mind like sun-colored suitors in a Greek myth. We were willing to do evil. We kept chocolate around our mouths. The last of her mother's lot, she cried at funerals, cried when she whipped me. She whipped me daily. I am most interested in people who declare gratitude for their childhood beatings. None of them took what my mother gave, waking us for school with sharp slaps to our bare thighs. That side of the family is darker. I should be grateful. So I will be. No one on earth knows how many abortions happened before a woman risked her freedom by giving that risk a name, by taking it to breast. I don't know why I am alive now, that I still cannot impress the woman who whipped me into being. I turned my mother into a grandmother. She thanks me by kissing my sons. Gratitude is black. Black as a hero returning from war to a country that banked on his death. Thank God, it can't get much darker than that.
Hmm.
Now, if that's not a poem, I don't know what is.
I tell you what, that just sends you in so many different directions, you know? I mean,
yes.
The imagery is very dark.
Yes.
And at the same time, there's this love and connection. And
right.
That's very powerful. That is Jericho Brown's The Tradition. And, you know, we don't think of summer reading as poetry, but sometimes it is a good time to sit down with some poetry. And that sounds like a good collection.
Absolutely.
My guest today is Nancy Pearl, a librarian, our longtime book reviewer, author. Her most recent book is The Writer's Library. And she's joining us to give us some ideas for some summer reading today on Studio Tulsa. The next book is... I don't know about in your household, but in our household, Nancy, through the last 18 months, we have watched every English crime procedural and also spy series that's out there. And there's something about the way the English do it. You know, it is just, it's a different animal. And I think our next two books are books that touch on that. And the first one is Peter Granger's Accidental Death, featuring D.C. Smith.
Yep. So this is the start of a 9-book series. I am eagerly waiting for book 8, which is on hold at my local library, and book 9, which comes out later this year. So I'm champing at the bit. I, too, love police procedurals, and this is a really good one because it focuses on not so much the crimes, but it focuses on the people who are on the policemen who are doing the looking into what's happened and why. It's one of those British mysteries where you just grow to love the main character, who is, in this case, D.C. Smith, Detective Constable Smith. And he at one time was an inspector, and he really decided, and we don't know what happened, but he decided that he didn't want to, like, sit at a desk and be in charge, that he wanted to be out there investigating. So he kind of took a demotion or retired as a DCI and then came back to work at the DC level. And, of course, his name is David Conrad Smith. So there's the cleverness of it, D.C. Smith, right. And he gets, in this first book, Accidental Death, he gets a beginning policeman, if you will, to take under his wing and to teach him everything that he knows. And, you know, it's the relationships that are really fun in this book, in the whole series, in fact. I would read them in order, though, and I would start definitely with Accidental Death.
Now, is D.C. Smith in London, or is he in another part of the U.K.?
He's in another part of the U.K.
I think he's in Norfolk. Is that
right? Yeah, he's in northern, right. He's in northern England in the Norfolk area, which just reading these made me want to do one of my long distance walks there because, you know, he talks about the salt marshes and the, this is a mystery series that has everything that I love in mystery series. And I think you would love it too, Rich.
All right. That is The Accidental Death by Peter Granger, the first book in the D.C. Smith series. And it sounds like if you like this one, you can go right on to number 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 because, as you said, you're awaiting 8. And it sounds like it's maintained itself through those first 7 volumes.
You know, that's a really good point. It has. That's what's really interesting to me. And because so often the first maybe 5 books or even 10 books are good, and then it, you know, starts to seem as though the author is just phoning it in, has really lost interest. But one of the ways that Peter Granger dealt with that issue is that the last 3 books, D.C. Smith has, I don't want to give it away, but he's no longer a main character in the book.
He's slowing down.
He's there, but he's not a main character. And I think moving it to focus on another group of characters, it was a really good decision. But I'm so glad that Peter Granger kept D.C. Smith there, you know, and didn't kill him off, which would have been too cruel for words.
Well, the next British procedural is a different sort of procedural, and that is the other thing that British authors do so well, and that is the spy novel. And this is Oliver Harris's Stealth Intelligence.
Boy, you know, you're right. The British do spy fiction better than almost anybody. And I discovered this author, Oliver Harris, because I read an advanced copy of his second book, his second in this series, which features a spy, a man who works for the Foreign Office named Elliot Kane. And I loved Ascension. I just thought it was just really great. It was it was set in an unusual place. And I just thought it was fabulous. And then when I tweeted about that, somebody said, oh, but you should read his first book featuring Elliot Kane called Stealth Intelligence. And I thought to myself, well, it couldn't be better than Ascension because that was so good. But oh my gosh, Stealth Intelligence is the best spy novel that I have read in a long time. First of all, it's set in Uzbekistan or Turkmenistan, one of the stands. And how many novels do we have that are set there? Also, it's really complex. I talked to a friend who was reading it on my recommendation, and she said, I don't know. I can't keep track of the different people and everything. But, you know, that's what spying is. It's complex. And I think the shape of the book really is a mirror for the topic of the book. And then the other thing that Oliver Harris does in both these books is that the intelligence now is not human intelligence so much as it is stuff coming in from the dark internet, from, you know, cell phone logs, all of those really up to the minute kind of resources that 21st century spies have. Can I read you a paragraph from
Sure.
this book? Okay. Here's a paragraph from this book, which will give you, I think, a sense of the John le Carré-ish nature of it. Which is the highest praise that I can give, I think. So here's the paragraph. Foreign Office cannot bear too much reality. When you travel between a world of reports and the one that people die in, intelligence product becomes a dubious thing. You impose order on chaos, give other people a false sense of understanding and authority. It involves the transformation of friends and brothers into agents or targets. That was the border crossing that eventually exhausted you.
Isn't that great? That is nice. And it sounds like it is up to the minute, as you mentioned. It's not a Cold War spy novel. It's 21st century conflicts, and it's Stealth Intelligence, the first in the Elliot Kane series by Oliver Harris. My guest today is Nancy Pearl, our longtime book reviewer, as we talk about some summer reading. You have a couple of novels for us, too. And the next one is Leonard and Hungry Paul by Ronan Hessian. Is that right?
Yes. Yep. Ronan Hessian is a Dublin writer who is also a musician, who goes by the name as a musician is Mumbling Deaf Row, I think, D-E-F. But Leonard and Hungry Paul is his first novel. It's a book that was chosen by Dublin for their All City Read. I got a chance to interview the author and really enjoyed talking to him about the book. This is a story of two men in their 30s, unmarried, who both live with their parents. And it's about their friendship and 3 or 4 months in their lives where things happen to them. It's a book that is really about two introverted people for whom quiet is a positive thing rather than, for many of us, a thing to be afraid of. My older daughter is really an introvert, and I remember when she read Susan Cain's nonfiction book called Quiet, and she said at that time that that made her feel much better about herself, that there's not anything wrong with being an introvert. And here are two young men who both operate in that space of quiet, and their friendship and the things that are happening in their life. So the writing is just lovely. One of the things that I most appreciated about this book is that Ronan never explained why Hungry Paul is nicknamed Hungry Paul. And I love it when writers trust readers enough not to answer every question. And I have the opening paragraph from this book to read you too, okay?
Okay.
Leonard was raised by his mother alone with cheerfully concealed difficulty, his father having died tragically during childbirth. Though she was not by nature the soldiering type, she taught him to look at life as a daisy chain of small events, each of which could be made manageable in its own way. She was a person for whom kindness was a very ordinary thing, who believed that the only acceptable excuse for not having a bird feeder in the back garden was that you had one in the front garden. Now, that's a paragraph that tells you, gives you everything about the style of the book and the kind of writer that Hessian is. I mean, there's humor in it, his father having died tragically in during childbirth, and, you know, the emphasis on kindness. I just think this is the opening paragraph, and as soon as I read this paragraph, I knew I would love this book, and indeed I did.
That's Leonard and Hungry Paul by Ronan Hessian. Up next is, it sounds like another one across the pond, too, Dervla McTiernan's The Ruin.
Yes, so this is the first of a three-book series. The third book is just coming out, and it is another police procedural. So, Rich, this is another book for you. The main character in this book is a policeman named Cormac Riley. And they're interesting. The characters are really well developed. They all have fascinating backstories. And this is a writer that I was really so happy to discover and am looking forward to more books in this series.
It sounds like it's set in Ireland, from the name Cormac Riley.
Yep.
All right, that's The Ruin by Dervla McTiernan. Now, up next is a very unusual book. It's Sigrid Nunez's Mitts, and it's the subtitle The Marmoset of Bloomsbury.
So Sigrid Nunez won one of the major awards last year for her, or a couple of years ago, for her novel, The Friend. And I picked up Myths because of the subtitle. I mean, I'm fascinated with Bloomsbury. Of course, that's Leonard and Virginia Woolf and their family and friends. But I never thought about maybe there was a marmoset along with the wolf. But it turns out that Sigrid Nunez based this on real events. The wolf, Leonard and Virginia Woolf, indeed had a marmoset whose name was Myth, that they took everywhere with them. And this is the story, you know, so this is a perfect book for novel for animal lovers. I mean, when's the last time you read a novel about a marmoset? But it's also perfect for people who love Bloomsbury, people who cannot get enough of Virginia and Leonard Woolf. I think that Nunez really has captured that marriage, Leonard and Virginia Woolf's marriage. And I think one of the things that it did when I was reading it, years and years ago, I read Leonard Woolf's diaries, which is where she got most of this information from. Nunez got most of this information from. And it made me want to go back and reread them because, not just to pick up on the marmoset stuff, but because Leonard Woolf had a really interesting life. And we tend, I think of him far less than we think about his wife, Virginia, and the tragedy of her life. Myths is just great, great fun.
Myths, The Marmoset of Bloomsbury by Sigrid Nunez. Now, the next book, now, one of the things I love about you is you're not content to just say, okay, what's the books that have come out in the last year or two? You'd love to go back in time. And this next one goes back almost a century to 1930, Marjorie Sharpe's Rhododendron Pie. What's special about this book?
Well, so there's a publisher in a British publisher named Dean Street Press who works with another publisher called Furrowed Middlebrow Books or Press. And I love Furrowed Middlebrow. I think that's so, so funny. But what they do is reprint books from the 20th century, both early in the 20th century, the golden age of British mysteries. They've reprinted a lot of that, but also from the middle of the 20th century, reprinting writers whose books have long, long, long been out of print. So Marjorie Sharpe is known to American readers for her books. The Rescuers was her first book.
Oh, right.
And everybody knows about Miss Bianca and Bernard, The Rescuers. But she also wrote adult books and Rhododendron Pie. And her adult books are delightful. I have to say, during the pandemic, I feel like I kept Dean Street Press afloat with all the books I read from them. And so Rhododendron Pie was her first adult novel, and it's just an absolute delight. And when people asked her about the book, she evidently wrote this book in a month. And she says, I allowed myself a month for it because that seemed a suitable time to spend over a book. and the main character in this book is the youngest daughter in a family. It's a family of bohemians who really pride themselves on disregarding and being scornful about conventional marriage, conventional life. Rhododendron Pie is a birthday pie that the oldest daughter got, you know, asked for because she didn't want a traditional apple or whatever. She wanted a flower pie. So this has become a tradition in the Leventi household. And this youngest daughter, Anne, you know, she wants an apple pie. I mean, she wants a traditional life. She's kind of sick of all this bohemian kind of atmosphere that her family has embraced. And this is the story of how she comes to understand that about herself and what she does. This was the book that set me off on reading, I think, probably 15 of Marjorie Sharpe's books, adult books. And, you know, some I like better than others, of course. Some I didn't care for very much at all, of course, but the ones that just, you know, some were just perfect. And Rhododendron Pie is one of those. They have great covers. And, you know, you can order books from Blackwell's in Oxford, England, mm-hmm. and it doesn't cost very much more than it would cost to buy at an American bookstore.
That's Marjorie Sharp's Rhododendron Pie. We have time for about one more, and that next one is Maggie Shipstead's The Great Circle, which sounds like a pretty epic novel.
That's a great definition of this book. This is going to be a big book, The Great Circle. Interestingly enough, I had never read anything else by Maggie Shipstead, though her other books, I don't know how I missed them. But The Great Circle is the story of a woman from birth to death, and we follow her life from the time that she realizes as a very young girl that all she wants to do is fly a plane, is to be a pilot. And through the complications of her early life, growing up as basically an orphan with her twin brother. And it's a book where the writing is great. It's a character who, you know, shares a little bit with Amelia Earhart. But it's a book where the characters grow on you, where they become very real. And I always like books where it's really character-centered, although character-driven, although this has a really big plot as well.
Well, you know, it's interesting that period of time in the 1920s was a time when adventure and larger-than-life lives were, that was something that authors wrote about. And it's kind of like this new book sort of goes back to that particular time and that mentality, I think, that it was apparent in literature at that time.
Yeah, I think that's true. And, you know, this was generally the period where Lindbergh was growing up and developing his interest in flight. And whatever you think about Lindbergh's personal life, you know, he was a pilot of note, let's say that. Yeah. And here's a woman to match him.
All
really.
Right.
That's with the right politics, I have to say that.
The Great Circle by Maggie Shipstead. Nancy, thanks for a great list of books. You can find them on our website. And thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, Rich, thank you for letting me go on and on and on about these books. I love this list.
Thanks for being here. Our book reviewer, librarian, and author, Nancy Pearl, speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa with a list of recommended reading for the summer months. Nancy's own most recent book is titled The Writer's Library. It's published by Harper's. And if you'd like to see the list of all the books we talked about today, they're available on our website at publicradiotulsa.org. Just look in the Studio Tulsa section. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.